Welcome to Under the Abbey Stand, yet another bumper edition in this lockdown madness. I'm Jack Swindlehurst, here with you as always. So we're going to firstly look back at the last few games and look ahead to the next few. And now that's done, joining me in the studio, inverted commas, Julian Roberts.
Hello, mate. What a lovely little bit of prepared banter that was.
Don't let anybody tell you that I don't prepare for this. Jordan Warland, welcome.
I enjoyed your very first prepared intro for a pod ever. It was great.
Look at him celebrating.
Evening, Jack. How are we?
Yeah, good. Look, enjoying the sunshine coming through the window on this rather odd Wednesday. So we've got some interesting news club-wise to bring you and the outlook of the club. But first, let's just have a little catch-up on where we are with Cambridge United and the wider football world. Still no football, lads. For the foreseeable, we know the National League have knocked their season on the head, and there's other things to come. So, how are we all feeling about the future of football, and more specifically, Cambridge United?
Could I just say, I never thought I would miss seeing Greg Taylor aimlessly punt the ball forward as much as I have been these last 4 weeks, having withdrawal symptoms for that.
I never thought I would want to go to Forest Green away so much as I did last Saturday.
That's a big dig from you there, Jordan. Early doors, that's a massive dig.
Jordan's come out swinging.
Like the best football player friend of the pod that we currently have.
Oh, I know, and we follow each other on Instagram as well. I feel bad.
Oh, all right. Slipping that in.
He's going to slide in my DMs, have a right go at me.
So we're going to talk about...
He's not sliding.
Yeah.
Nah, he's too good for that. But I mean, I've just got Greg Taylor on the mind because obviously I've not had a haircut for weeks, and it just reminds me of when he sort of was growing his hair longer at the start of this season. So that's why I'm picking on Greg.
First name
on the team sheet. That's why.
But yeah,
I can attack his hair because he got better when he cut his hair. That's a fact. That's a fact from this season, which is about to be voided or will be lost to the history books.
Yeah, I mean, we've got a lot to kind of discuss on that and a lot to hear from many different sources on that. But yeah, Cambridge United, on the news that they furloughed all but seven staff members, rather inevitably, we're going to look at that. So no football for the foreseeable for us, and the state of the club hanging in the balance, as a lot of the Football League clubs in the country are, as it stands. The wider football world, gents, it looks like we're going to be welcoming German football back first. So who's everyone gone for in the Bundesliga?
Union Berlin, mate. It's got to be. Yeah, because I forgot they were in the Bundesliga, if I'm perfectly honest with you. That shows how much I keep up
with
German football.
Big Berlin fan.
But, oh, huge, mate, huge.
What about
Union
you, George?
Doing well?
I was going to say Union as well, but I feel like I should think of another one. Let me text my mate Greg and see who he supports, and I'll go with him.
No way. You turn up. I'm just Hoffenheim. Hoffenheim are my team. Tom, who are you going for?
Probably Bayern Munich, going the underdog.
I like that. That's niche from you there.
It'll be good to celebrate a trophy towards the end of the season, actually. It'll be good to have something to play for. I mean, if I wasn't a support Bundesliga team.
Isn't the Bundesliga trophy really weird?
Yeah, it's a plate.
Isn't it like it's a plate.
Yeah, it's just a massive plate. Yeah. And they often cover each other in loads of beer as well when they win the league. I seem to recall Frank Ribery being covered in beer, which he wasn't very happy about. Yeah. Well, I mean, that's for religious reasons, so... I mean, like a litre of beer on him seemed a bit out of order, to be honest.
The lack of compassion shown by those players was horrible in that situation. Yeah. It happened more than once.
I think we should move away from this subject just in case.
That's not our pod. That's not our pod territory at all.
Just in case.
We should also move away from German football because we've got loads to talk about locally. A nice little segue there. The podcast's finest journalist, Julian Roberts, had the privilege of catching up with the Cambridge United CEO, Ian Mather, and here's what he had to say.
First of all, thanks very much for agreeing to do this. I appreciate how busy you must be, and as of everyone, like, I hope you're keeping well. And I like to use the word unprecedented, which I don't think has been used quite enough at the moment.
Somebody told me there's an unprecedented use of the word unprecedented.
Yeah. But I guess, you know, it is completely unprecedented, and football club, especially across the country, are suffering as a result. And in such a time of uncertainty, as of everything, these sorts of times, lower league clubs are the ones that feel this the most. And I guess the first question that I was wondering personally is this the biggest crisis that you think has ever hit lower league football?
I think, well, obviously I wasn't around at World War One and World War Two, but given those two possible exceptions, it's got to be the biggest thing that's ever hit football ever.
Yeah, and I mean, we saw this morning that the National League have officially made their decision to postpone, to void the... And is that an indication of where you think England is going to go from here? Is that something that League One and League Two are looking at now?
Well, the EFL position at the moment is that they want to finish the season. And they want to finish it for two reasons. One is for the integrity of the competition, and secondly, is for commercial reasons. But in the end, it will be determined by the virus and by government advice. So the earliest we would be playing again, according to the EFL, is sometime in early June. But increasingly, that's looking very unlikely. And the longer it goes on and the closer you get to the 30th of June deadline for contract renewal, the harder it is to see how this season could be finished. And personal view is that I don't think it will be.
Is that a view on sort of, you know, assessing the situation, or is that your personal sort of opinion that that's the best way to go as well? In terms of
it's both. It's an assessment of where we are in relation to COVID-19. So a practical assessment of how likely is it. But I think probably it's the right thing to do anyway. One of the things that we've got to juggle with is the money. And at the moment, the only new money that's come into lower league football is the government's furlough payments. If we start playing in June, then we have to unfurlough staff. We certainly have to unfurlough the players. So it increases our costs. We don't have a crowd, but we've still got stadiums to run and games to travel away to. So our costs go up. We lose the new money of furlough to finish the season. And on balance, I think it would probably be better if we didn't. But that said, if the EFL managed to get it going, we'll play our part and we'll play the games.
And by voiding the season, just to be clear, does that mean that this season is completely expunged? It never happened. No one goes up, no one goes down. Or does the league finish in the exact positions that everyone is in at the moment?
Those are questions that would be decided by the EFL board. There are various permutations, those which you gave. You leave it as it is. You create some method of allocating points based on previous performance. You have a pools panel, I've heard a suggestion. So there are various ways that you do it. I think one thing you can say for Cambridge United is it won't make any difference. We wouldn't be going up or we wouldn't be going down.
Yeah, we're kind of in a sort of fortunate position in that sense. If you're looking up the road at someone like Peterborough United, I'm sure they would have a very different view on how they would want this season to finish. But if you mentioned earlier that...
Yeah, and looking down the road to Stevenage, they probably have a different view as well.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah. It's the biggest jail free card ever. So if, given what you said a second ago about... the expectation at the moment being for the earliest football to come back would be early June, but that looking increasingly unlikely. If the season were to be voided, would we be looking at a normal start date for the next season, beginning of August?
Again, I don't think anyone can say at the moment, because it is all going to be dictated by the government guidelines or government instruction. And you'll have seen that in Holland, they have just said that there's going to be no games played before the 1st of September.
Mm.
And so that's entirely possible here, I would say.
And I guess something that we've been asked a lot in the past week or so is, and something that I think a lot of people are wondering, is if football were to come back, hypothetically, and matches were to be able to go ahead, but not in front of a crowd, would they be, has there been any talk of if they'd be available online for fans to watch, or any sort of streaming services or anything like that?
Yeah. We've got to find some way, both for the fans to watch the football and clubs to generate some revenue. And the obvious one would be to expand access to iFollow. And there have been discussions going on about how that might work, what the access arrangements would be like. As I understand it, iFollow as a platform has the capacity to extend the number of users significantly. So I think that's probably the way it would go.
And in terms of, so just bringing it maybe to specifically to Cambridge United for a second, as that is kind of what brings us here. Obviously, I think a lot of the worries for a lot of people have been financially, as you very briefly mentioned. And how much of a help have the initial season ticket sales been within that?
They've been a great help on two levels. One is over 600 fans bought season tickets. And we were very clear, only do that if you were in a position to be able to do that. But they did. And so it helps on the financial front. It gives us money which otherwise we wouldn't have had. In fact, it's the only sizable amount of money we've had since we stopped playing football in the middle of March. The other thing is it gives us encouragement. It shows that there's a really strong fan base there willing to support us. So it's been very welcome, and we're just going to move on from here.
This is obviously yesterday, Paul Barry put out a statement, a very comforting statement, saying that he's still financially committed to the club. Is there like a real danger of the football club going under?
I think there is a real danger of a number of football clubs going under. What we're working hard at is to making sure that we're not one of them. And I'm not going to pretend it's easy. The numbers are quite challenging. It's obvious to all. We've got no income, but we've got costs. But we've done everything we can to reduce the costs. So we've furloughed everyone but seven people. We have deferred paying VAT and PAYE by agreement with the government. We have had a rent holiday from our landlord. We have done what we can with retail sales, and they have been really good. Again, fans helping us out there. So we've taken every step we can, and we're constantly looking at modelling going forward to see what cash we need, when we need it, and to work out how we're going to fill the gaps.
And how much of an impact would this sort of precarious, I mean, this sounds like quite an obvious question, but a precarious financial position like we're in, how much has it affected plans for next season and sort of impact, and what sort of impact will it have on the club in the long run once football is resumed?
I think in the very long run, once football's resumed and we get back on an even keel, I think it's going to be positive for football, positive for Cambridge United, positive for lower league clubs generally. And the reason for that is that I think it will cause there to be a reset of how clubs are financed. And I think we will move to a more sustainable model. We've not been immune from how nearly all lower league clubs operate. And there's been a race for talented players. It's increased the player cost beyond the level which clubs can generate from their own income. And I think you'll see a reset so that the cost of clubs will come closer to the income they generate. So moving forward, I think it's actually a positive thing. We're just going to make sure we get to the point where we can enjoy the positive.
And is there anything that, obviously we've already talked about the sort of uncertainty around football coming back, and we've talked about how season tickets and kit sales have been important in terms of some revenue. We've been asked by Mark Manning on Twitter if there's any plans for next season's kit to still be launched regardless of the situation with football, or any other initiatives that are planned that maybe would bring in a few, you know, increase that revenue by somewhat.
Okay, well, without spilling the beans too much, Gareth Daniels has been working on a project for some time now, before COVID-19 was thought of. So there will be an offer out at the end of this month, which will be attractive to fans, a sort of special offer. I'm not going to tell you more than that because I'll spoil his surprise.
Don't ruin his
But then there is also, we will be bringing out a new kit, and that'll be done in June. And that kit is already signed off, it's being made, and will be shipped in June.
So that'll be available to buy as per normal, no matter what the situation is of the football season.
It will, yeah. And we'd be delighted if fans want to buy it. I've seen it, it looks very cool. Hopefully they will fly out the door.
I'm sure they will. This is something you mentioned just a while ago, just bringing it to players for a second. Obviously, player contracts are up on the 30th of June. How are they affected? I guess is it a knock-on effect on what happens in terms of the resumption of football, or will those players be leaving on the 30th of June regardless?
Well, the player contracts we dealt with by Ben Strain, working alongside Mark Bonner. But they've got a clear idea of the squad they want and how to go about getting it, and those conversations will take place between now and the end of June. So we'll work on the basis the club carries on. We have to shape up a team for next season to make it as competitive as we can make it. And that work will carry on.
And have those plans been affected at all in terms of buying the right players and, you know, the football plan for next season, or whenever next season is?
Exactly, whenever next season is. So is the transfer window going to close when it was planned to close? Possibly not. It would probably be extended if the season start is delayed. And there will be, I think, quite a few players available for contract. I think it's a matter of record that there's probably going to be 1,400 players in the EFL out of contract at the end of June. It's going to be a different market. So we'll assess it, but we know the sort of players we want. Mark and Ben have got a very clear idea of how they want to set the team up. And when the time comes, we know the sort of player we're looking for.
Have you had much contact with the players at the moment? How are they getting on? How's morale? Pretty tough.
I had a Zoom call with them a week or so ago. And I think it's clear that they're all very busy on WhatsApp with each other. A number of them are chatting to each other. Greg Taylor's been in touch with them as captain. Leo Manil's the PFA rep. So as a group, they seem to be engaging well together. Obviously, they're all in different parts of the country following the story, but and wishing they could train.
Yeah, I bet. And I guess lastly, what I think a lot of, obviously this is such a delicate situation for everyone in terms of their own livelihoods, and a lot of people have lost such a routine to their lives and will be worried about obviously the future of the club and football, et cetera, et cetera. But is there something as the CEO that might be sort of quite comforting for people, or is there a message particularly pertaining to Cambridge United fans that would be, you know, a help for people?
Yeah, I think the key message is that we are organised, we're focused, we're determined to get through this so that Cambridge United compete again next season. It isn't easy, but there is such a unity of purpose across the board, owner, management, and fans, all going in the same direction. I think we're in a better place than many clubs are at the moment.
Interesting stuff. Yeah, enlightening to hear from Ian Mather and a man who speaks very well. Julian, good to catch up with Ian there. And yeah, anything more come out of that interview?
There was one question that, being the best journalist on this pod, is hardly an accolade to shout about. there was one question, being the experienced journalist I am, that I forgot to ask him, which was actually quite crucial on regional leagues. So I quickly emailed him afterwards, and he gave this reply on whether he thinks regionalising divisions is the best way to resume football and what United's thoughts are on that. This is his answer. He said, "The reason behind the idea for regional leagues is to cut costs and make clubs more sustainable. It would save on travel costs, but I think there are other things we could do that have a bigger effect, such as salary caps. A regional league could get in the way of salary caps because getting agreement on what a meaningful cap should be would be much harder if we mix teams from League One and League Two. For example, Morecambe will have a much smaller playing budget than Sunderland, but both would be in the Northern Combined League. They would find it hard to agree a meaningful salary cap. So on balance, although there are attractions, I would support other measures ahead of a regional league." And he also said that this is an issue that could get in the way of a bigger gain. So I think it's quite interesting to start this on like almost this like huge long-term effect that he talks about, which is this idea that football, after all this, could actually be in a much better place. And that is, there's clearly this, there must be some sort of conversation going around about salary caps and how football can best move on, especially in the lower leagues, from this crisis. I don't know if, I don't know. What do you think? Do you think that's something that's realistic?
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the things that was really interesting to take out of that was, you know, Ian was, you know, really keen to get across this idea that, you know, when we come out the other side of this, hopefully sooner rather than later, maybe we might see that positive in that, you know, football might be reformed to an extent, particularly in the lower levels of how it's run. And you know, based on the points he raised, you know, you think that's probably going to be something that will probably happen, you know, from a player's perspective, for example. I guess what they would be looking for above anything at the moment would be, you know, kind of stability. And if it's the case that they have to take a slightly lower wage to secure that, then that's probably what they're going to have to do. You know, I was pretty shocked really when he said, I think it's 1,400 players across the EFL that would be out of contract come sort of the end of June. You know, that's a hell of a lot of players, you know, fighting for spots, you know, within the sort of professional leagues. And obviously that's the same way that he talks about a bit of a race for talent from the clubs previously. Well, there's going to be a bit of a race on the other side in terms of players trying to find clubs, and that's going to have the opposite impact of driving prices down. And, you know, you would suspect that that's going to, in turn, you know, kind of help clubs to run a bit more sustainably. I'm not sure how realistic it is that something like that will be enforced. I think it's more likely that sort of downward pressure on wages come from, like I say, so many people sort of being out of work looking for a new contract to, you know, with kind of a League Two, League One, Championship club, rather than, let's say, the EFL saying that at this level you have to be paid, you know, 10 grand a week or grand a week or whatever.
So it'd be more of like it would be a bit more of like a natural progression. And I think for me, then that's a great argument for not regionalising divisions, right? Mm. I mean, does anyone think that regional divisions is the way forward here?
Yeah, I mean, my kind of perspective on that is, I mean, I just don't really see the point. Like, you know, if they're talking about it as a cost-cutting measure, I mean, do you really save more money, you know, going from, how significant would the saving be if you, instead of playing, you know, let's say, Carlisle and Sunderland, that you're playing, you know, Plymouth and Portsmouth? Do you save that much money? You know, the journeys are still quite long either way. I'm not sure.
To be fair, they're both big supported clubs, so they would bring a lot more fans. And I think that's kind of the point, isn't it? So maybe less saving money, but more making money with with your attendances if you're allowed to have crowds there and it's not behind closed doors.
That's the thing. So, but for me, if you are allowed to have crowds there, then I don't see the difference in if we're at a point where we can go to live football matches with, like, you know, how much stadium of Light hold, like
40,000.
Right, exactly. How many do they get? 5,000 or whatever. But, like, if we're at a point where live football can, if we're at a point where that many people can go to a live football match, things are going to be pretty much back to normal in this country. So I don't see why. I completely agree with Tom. I don't see why that's.
But I genuinely can't see mass gatherings of people, primarily sport, but also maybe things like live music and stuff like that, and even going to the pub. I can't see that happening until later in the year or until a vaccination is found. So maybe that's why regional is being touted, to sort of keep everyone sort of local and keep people playing for a year.
I think it sounds unlikely to me for a lot of these reasons we've just talked about. I think what's more interesting to go on to is the voiding season or not. So this morning we obviously found out that the National League have voided their season. Correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think they've detailed whether that means it's completely expunged and they start again as fresh next year, or if it's voided in the sense that it finishes as of today, as the standings are, right?
I think they still have to come up with a decision on that. But yeah, they haven't even actually had even all the votes in from the relevant clubs, but the majority is already enough because the deadline was the 25th of April. The majority is already enough. They know that is now the decision. And also within official articles and releases, the future of League 1 and 2 is very much in the balance as that was. So we could, in the next month or 2 months, expect a similar vote that would then, you know, have the same, you know, eventuality as...
Isn't it interesting that they've made their decision today, though? Because obviously there is a part of their decision which will be impacted by the EFL. You know, are they... You know, I think the Barrow chairman said today, you know, he agreed with the decision, but their promotion into the Football League is now completely out of their hands. So it just seems interesting that the National League have made a decision separate to the EFL when you would normally be looking at two clubs going from one to the other, and not including the relegated clubs. Maybe it's easier this season because what's happened to Bury. Maybe we'll see some more teams nominated to come up from the conference should other teams not survive this COVID-19 period, and we need to make up the numbers back to 92.
Yeah, I think there's probably two parts to it, aren't there? The first one is, can you finish the league season? Yes or no? And then the second part of that is, if you can't, which I think we're probably all increasingly aware is the situation, you know, that this season won't be finished. How do you resolve that? Obviously, Jack, you said that it looks like League One and League Two are in the balance. I think it seems pretty likely that that's going to be, you know, that the rest of the season will be cancelled. And then you come to this issue of how do you settle the season? Do you settle the league season? That's obviously hugely problematic. And the reason for that is because, you know, we are quite a long way into the season. Obviously, I think most had sort of 8, 9, 10 games left. And there's going to be agendas at play because of that. Obviously, you mentioned the Barrow chairman. He would, I presume, would ideally like the season to be settled based on the league as it is now. You've got clubs like Liverpool who are in the same bracket, for example. In League Two, you look at Crewe, who have had a good season. They would obviously like the season to finish now. Maybe you've got teams just outside the promotion places who would like it to be decided on points per game, which is an interesting way of solving the season. And you've got teams like Stevenage, who obviously aren't doing very well, who I think Ian Matt mentioned in the interview, who would probably quite like the season to be scrapped. I mean, from my own perspective, the way that I see things, if you can't finish a league season, I don't see how you can award promotion or titles or relegate teams. It seems baffling to me that you would do that. I mean, I understand that there are cases like Liverpool where they're star clear, for example, that it seems pretty certain that they can win the league, but by definition of what winning the league mathematically is, still a potential that they might not win it. And if you look at League Two, for example, it's so tight. You know, teams have played different teams. Teams have different run-ins left. And it seems strange that you would set a league season based on what you think might happen. I think that would open up all sorts of sort of legal disputes and that sort of thing. And this is probably something that's going to go on for kind of many, many years to come. And I think ultimately what it's going to come down to is that, you know, clubs at the top end of leagues, whether they like it or not, are just going to have to accept that this is a bit of a shit situation we find ourselves in. There are going to have sacrifices made. And I think ultimately, my opinion, what should happen is that the league should be void. If they can't be finished, which they probably can't. And, you know, you just kind of go from there, really.
I guess we're lucky in the sense that we've got fuck all to play for. We're in the great position where we're not going. He says it himself, Ian. He says, we're not going up, we're not going down. I'm sure there's so many dependencies on everything, right? And I've got a lot of sympathy for a lot of those questions I was asking him, because it's not like he can just, that everything's dependent on each other, and it's not like he can just give a straight answer to anything. So it's like, you know, the player contracts is a huge that is a huge factor in whether or not this season could ever be finished, because they technically run out on the 30th of June. As you mentioned, Tom, that's 1,400 players across the EFL. They technically run out on the 30th of June. They get a month leeway. So you have to finish the season by 30th of July. So that gives you 56 days before that, which is what they said they could do it in. So they have to be guaranteed playing football by what, the start of June?
That's mental though, isn't it? Because there's what,
with some pre-season?
At least 8 or 9 games left per club. So how do you, what is that, 190 odd games to do in the space of 2 months? How often would you be playing? Every 3 days, something like that?
And I mean, we have a government enforced lockdown till the 7th of May for now. It's not just going to go back to normal overnight. Like, the idea, actually, the more you think about it, of this season being finished in any way, is kind of ludicrous to think about. And it just seems completely unrealistic. As much as I have some genuine sympathy for clubs like Barrow and, you know, if you're a Stevenage fan, you're counting your lucky stars, etc. But that's the way it's gone. No one's decided this. This is completely out of everyone's hands.
But there's so many huge financial factors involved as well, because if you look at, say, West Brom, who are on the last year of their parachute payments from the Premier League relegation, I think they're second in the Championship. They are looking like they'd go up. So if you say you don't get your promotion, do you then have to give them another year of parachute payments? And if you don't, then financially they're in a whole load of mess. And you can see lawsuits in the making and every kind of level that we're at.
Well, talking about finances and bringing it back to what brings us all here, which is Cambridge United. I think something that was asked when we asked for some questions on Twitter was, you know, Paul Barry's involvement. Obviously, we've mentioned he's in the American travel industry, probably couldn't be in a worse industry throughout this whole crisis. He yesterday put out a statement saying he was still financially committed to the club, which is great. And I speak for everyone in saying that, you know, he has our full backing as an owner, and that it doesn't feel like empty words when it's Paul Barry. It feels like something he genuinely means and commits to. But clearly, whenever there is a transfer window, whenever that ends up happening, our plans will have changed. That's without a doubt, right? Without a shadow of a doubt. But what I would say is, we are lucky in the sense that we are in a financially stronger position going into this than so many clubs up and down the country. And I think I asked him, are we in danger of going under? And he couldn't say no. But I think in as many words, like, his point is that, you know, if we're going to go under, like, then everyone's in trouble, sort of thing. Do you know what I mean? Like, I feel like there was that sort of sentiment to it, that so many other clubs are in so much of a worse situation than us that we should be okay.
I mean, I think he raised the point, you know, like you said, quite openly, we're in a better place than a lot of clubs. He said about the fact, you know, half the point of furloughing everyone but 7 staff members is that kind of thing. It's putting things in place. The rent holiday given by the landowner who owned the land that the ground's on, you know, there are things in place, and they have to be reassuring fans. But yeah, you feel that if this is going to start you know, ending clubs' existence, then there's got to be some sort of, you know, something in place to save football. I know it sounds...
Yeah, I know. And I guess the thing is, like, you know, you've seen the way the government has spoken about Premier League footballers ahead of, you know, committing some of their wage and not pointing out stockbrokers or bankers or etc. That's like a separate conversation. But you see the way they talk about Premier League footballers, let alone lower league football clubs. And I mean, the idea of like bailouts for let's say like 60 clubs are in danger of going bust in the next few months. The idea of a government bailout, I've no inside knowledge, it's complete conjecture. It feels like it just feels impossible.
I thought it was quite interesting when he said that actually, from his perspective, and I should start this by saying I thought he spoke really well in the interview, and he's quite a reassuring person to have as CEO. God knows we've had some terrible people at the top in the club. But what I thought was interesting was he clearly is quite clued on with finances. I hope that's not famous last words. But the point that he made about actually furloughing the playing staff and voiding the season is more cost effective than bringing the season back and playing games where you've got to pay people's wages, you don't get the government money, and obviously you don't get the gate receipts and you'll have travel and so forth. So I thought that was quite an interesting sort of perspective from our side.
It was also, I think that's a really good point, that people have just assumed that they'd want to get football back up and running as quick as possible, even if it is behind closed doors. But like you say, that's suddenly a massive expenditure for the club and zero income still. So it's almost like, you know, we go back to this voiding thing. You almost think like it's better, it might be a bit painful for us to have to wait another 6 months, let's say, before we can watch a football match. But like that might be guaranteeing the safety, the long-term security, sorry, and existence of a lot of football clubs.
Just returning to regional football, I know we moved on, and I didn't get to say my point that I'd be for it for one season because there'd be some great jollies and some great away days. But I wonder if that's being considered as an idea in case people do go bust, and then all of a sudden you've got to somehow pad out the leagues to have enough teams in it.
Yeah, it's I wonder if that, like, I feel like there has to be something more in it, because, you know, like I said, I don't really necessarily see the point of regionalising the league because of coronavirus. I think it's a more like strategic sort of restructuring of the pyramid, and you wonder if there might be something in that that it is more like a financial thing if clubs go under and things like that. I mean, to me, it seems pretty clear that there are clubs that are going to be a threat from coming under. I think today or perhaps late on yesterday, we saw probably the first example of that. I think it was in Wales, Real FC. I'm probably pronouncing it wrong. Maybe Real, Rail, I don't know. You know, somewhere in Wales.
It's definitely Rail, mate. There. Definitely.
Rail, Real.
Have we all got to pick, you know, a Welsh team as well now?
No. we have enough worries on our own. But like, you know, I just wonder if it's going to be clubs at sort of either end of the spectrum that are going to be most at risk. So I think of like Accrington, Morecambe, the likes of those sorts of clubs who sort of live week to week anyway, who are going to be most at risk. And then you have the likes of maybe like Salford, for example, Fleetwood, clubs like that, who maybe in recent years have spent what you would suggest would be sort of on their means, and now that there is literally no income, they're left with sort of massive wage bills and things like that, and no real way of paying. You know, you wonder if you might see the sort of shit or bust clubs, and also the scrapping around for a quid Morecambe sort of clubs that are going to be most effective. But it's an interesting time.
I think on this, you know, as well. In terms of, he mentioned how important season tickets were, and early season ticket sales have been as like the only income stream, which is the Jordan Warland idea from a few months ago. and also, he mentioned shirt sales. I think that away shirt sold out like overnight, didn't it? When they cut the prices. And is everyone excited for whatever this mystery offer is at the end of the month?
I wonder what it could be. I had a genuine question about season tickets, because I've seen this mentioned a few times and I wondered what people's thoughts are. Where do we stand on what happens if the season, next season, doesn't happen? What if it is all behind closed doors, or if it gets voided as well? Where do we stand on the thinking around the 600 people who bought a season ticket getting a refund? It's quite a controversial subject, and I know it will probably split opinion. I know amongst reading the message board, people have differing thoughts on it, but what about you guys on the panel?
I think there's something to be said for, obviously, this is, again, all dependent on exactly what happens. Let's say there is a football season happening, but we've paid a season ticket to games that we aren't allowed to go and watch because it's all behind closed doors, which is possible in terms of live events will be the last thing to happen, to go ahead. If there's tests, football could happen. 22 players, some coaches could all be tested in, you know, special stadiums and stuff. That could happen. So in that scenario, maybe there's something they could do where people who have bought season tickets can watch, that's your pass for watching the game online, for streaming it, which is something that you mentioned would happen. Because either way, you'd think that offering fans the opportunity to stream games at a price could be a way of funding some clubs, right? So it's like, in the way that I think iFollow does now, it'd be that, but on a bigger scale. So in my opinion, I guess your question is more on actual, you know, should you be entitled to go and ask for a refund? If you ask me, given the context, those 600 people know that they are also part of the reason they bought a season ticket at this stage is as an act of goodwill towards their football club, as well as wanting a season ticket. I think it's laced with that context that I think is then a bit, little bit hypocritical to then go back on and ask for your money back, in my opinion.
I wouldn't for a second ask for my money back. I would happily either give it as a donation or have it rolled on to the following season. But then maybe some people aren't in that position. Maybe they can't afford to sort of pass that up.
No,
I just think it's interesting, isn't it? Because, you know, you've bought something. I don't know if there's any contract kind of obligations part of the T's and C's. If you bought something and then you don't get anything for it, in any other kind of scenario, you would be entitled to a refund, right?
No, you'd be entitled to a voucher if it's a flight.
Topical.
Yeah, it's very topical, isn't it?
Say that, Ryanair.
I think on that one, I think probably with like refunds and things like that, obviously everyone will have their own opinion and their own kind of own situations to obviously look after with that sort of thing. I think probably you've got more legitimacy to ask for a refund for actually the games that you're not going to be this season. Because I think when the season tickets for next season, I think that the club can come out and say that this is pretty much a pot for you to put some money in to help us through and to sort of help us survive as a club. They've got to offer some sort of product along with it. But I think the club pretty strongly implied that this was more of a donation, to be honest, in terms of the season tickets going on sale. They said very clearly that don't buy one if you can't afford to go without this money. And, you know, 600 people have bought them. And if we don't get a season, I'm sure there will be people amongst them who would ask for the money back. And ultimately, like I say, if that's the situation you're in, then that's obviously your prerogative. But I think it's quite clear as well that if you weren't in a situation to do that, then you shouldn't buy a season ticket, because they're not forcing people to buy money. They will be back on sale at some point, assuming the season would go ahead. But, you know, we have to assume that that money's spent, basically, on kind of helping the club stay afloat. But, yeah, it's always going to be a bit of... It's the same argument, right, as when you've got to lose 7-0 at Luton, do you deserve a refund for your ticket there, isn't it, really? You know, you're not really getting the service that you pay for, but it's...
But that's following a football club. That's following
a
football
club, right?
Yeah, no,
slightly different. You've seen a performance. You've seen a game. And
entry into a ground and the performance hasn't gone to your liking. I think it's slightly different, but I know exactly what you mean, Tom. It's like...
Yeah, I get your point.
It's But anyway, yeah. Go on, Tom. Jordan.
Cheers, mate. I was just going to say, we're all betting people. Let's enter into a little sweepstake of what we reckon the next season will look like? When do we think it will start? And do we think there will be crowds allowed?
I think
winner wins nothing.
Winner wins a fucking burger on the first game of the season. I think the season, this season will be voided. Next season will start as normal, but behind closed doors. So start, we'll have football on at the start of August, and I think we'll be allowed back into grounds not too long after that, September, October-ish.
Do you think that's it? I think that's ambitious.
I am being quite ambitious there, I'll give you that. It could. Do you know what? People have said that until we have a vaccination, there won't be any events of more than about 250 people. So
Forest Green's that fine.
So Forest Green's fine. Very good. To be fair, Tom, I probably agree. I think it could be it could even be the start of next year, but I don't want to be that pessimistic.
I'm afraid I'm more pessimistic in my outlook on it. I think that the season will start around normal, maybe even slightly later, pack games in a bit more, but I think we could see a full season without full season behind closed doors before pre-season next year when we start eking people back in.
I think ultimately what's going to happen is like the football calendar will need to be adjusted a little bit. I think, to be honest, I think the season starting again in August seems pretty ambitious as well. The logistics of it, you know, what happens if a footballer catches coronavirus? Like, you have to, that team then can't play, and that
I think the point on that is that if you have a test and if you can test a whole squad, if you can test a whole squad, whether they have it or not, or whether they have had it, you can pass people as fit or as safe. If all you have to test is 40 people, and you keep them in a, like, there are ways of doing it if you have a test available, but it's all based on that.
Yeah, and you know, not just EMAFA, but plenty of people have, you know, obviously alluded to. You know, we are dictated. You know, what we do is completely dictated by how this kind of pans out with regards to virus and infections and that sort of thing. I think what would be interesting is looking at sort of the tournaments that are involved, sort of internationally speaking, and how that affects the calendar anyway. Because obviously, the World Cup in Qatar in 2022 is due to be played in December, isn't it? Right. So what you could do is, I mean, I've already said that I think the season won't be finished, but if you were going to look to finish the season, what you would maybe do is finish it, say, by November or something, just allow it to be finished naturally, hopefully in front of fans, and get that finished sort of by the end of this year. And then what you do is you start next season in like December or January, and you have a season which runs from then until the Euros. And then you have the next season sort of following on from that until, you know, the season after, and then you have it all in line with that sort of calendar where the international tournaments are within the kind of winter. It's the problem is that it's all ifs and buts, and we're going to come up with however many solutions between ourselves and between national media and you know, other people are going to have their own opinions as well. And ultimately, it all comes down to the fact that we can't even leave our houses at the moment. It's very difficult to predict and plan for things. So, tough one.
It is tough. Is there anything else? Anyone else have any thoughts on Ian Maffa?
Well, I think he came across very well. Wow. We like to, you know, dig the club.
Yeah,
he came across really well. And
I mean, Tom mentioned it at the start, but I really liked his kind of broader thinking about the bigger football picture and what could be the state of play in months or years to come because of this. And you know, he talks about salary caps, and he talks about, you know, players being available, kind of a resetting of a financial model, and people maybe not living beyond their means and things like that. I think that could be a really fascinating turn of events for English lower league football, and could really rejuvenate it and maybe make fans and clubs a lot closer.
Yeah, I agree. I think that there is, as sort of horrible in so many different ways, this whole crisis has been, silver lining is always good things to look for. And if that is something that comes out of it in the football world, in the lower league football world, if there is a more even playing field, so to speak, that is a definite positive for me. But it was great to have Ian on. Massive thanks. Jack, I would let you do the outro, but since you've rejoined on your phone, you sound like you're talking... Well, you just sound horrific, mate. So,
oh my God, it's happening. Julian is sacking Swindle.
Live on the pod. No words from Jack. Thank you, though, Jack, for everything. Tom, pleasure, mate.
As always.
Jord, we'll take over the world, mate, me and you.
See you soon, everyone.